Welcome to another episode of Adoption, The Making of Me, an oral history of adoptee stories. I'm Sarah Reinhart.
And I'm Louise Brown. Make sure to find us on the socials at The Making of Me Podcast. Our website is adoptionthemakingofme.com.
Thank you.
Thanks. In today's episode, we will be continuing to discuss Relinquished, The Politics of Adoption and the Privilege of American Motherhood by Gretchen Sisson. And then we will be bringing on our guest, Valerie. Stay tuned.
Hi, Louise.
Hi, Sarah.
It's like a game of chicken. Who's going first?
I try to see what your face is going to do.
Well, you know what we're talking about now?
Patreon
Zoom. Jinx.
Jinx. 1 p.m. Eastern on May 11th.
May 11th. And the topic is reunion. How, like, if you're in reunion, how you feel about it. I guess if you're not in reunion, how you feel about that.
Yeah. Complications that arise. Right. Not always the Hollywood ending of that. And so.
Yeah. I forgot what I was going to say. Flew out of my mind.
Well, one of our guests brought it up, and it's a good idea. One of our Patreons. I said guest because she was a guest.
We were a guest on her podcast as well.
We were. I'm really just in love with that group. I think about it a lot.
I do too. You know, let's be truthful. We went almost 2 hours last time, right? So if you become a $10 monthly Patreon, you too can join these Saturday Zooms. We always slate it for an hour and then we always go more. This week, we probably would have gone even longer. You had a drive and I hadn't had lunch plans. So,
yeah. And you know, the group can go longer. I was thinking, we just make someone the host, but we're clearing our plates for the next one. We'll just assume they're going to go longer.
Yeah. So hopefully if you, become a patron and join us, it's really worth it. It's great.
Hello again, Sarah.
Hi again, Louise.
Here we are.
We both can hold up the book, Relinquished, Gretchen Sisson. We're on the chapters Cassie, followed by Jordan. And these were two birth mother stories. And
I like how she does it. It's like anecdotal because we've had so much information already. Mm-hmm. I had to go back and reread some, actually. And then it's just two short anecdotal stories, but they're both very powerful. They say a lot.
Yeah, right out the gate, a quote from Cassie. And these were, and by the way, listeners, if you're not reading along, these are told in first person. Like they must have talked on the phone to Gretchen or maybe wrote out their stories, kind of an essay form. But right out the gate, Cassie says, I would have needed maybe $1,000 for my life to change. Just a very small amount of money would have probably changed my entire world. It's really weird to think of that now. $1,000 and maybe she would have raised her own child.
We discuss this all the time. It's so many people. It just comes down to that financial moment, healthcare. They don't know what's ahead for the grief and the loss they're going to feel. I thought about my first mother, Linda, in that because she really just was cash poor. She had a decent job, but was young. And so when Cassie is going through this, she gets pregnant. She's 22. She had a boyfriend.
Actually, was she not a little younger, I think? Was she? Maybe you're right.
No, she was 22. I remember.
Right. 22. Yeah. 22 in college. Yeah.
Yeah. And she actually, this is also sad, this part right here. Even though my family is politically liberal, they're not liberal or open-minded when it comes to me to even consider parenting. I just felt like I would need their support and I knew I didn't have it. They were extremely supportive of the adoption though. They were like, it's so smart and mature. What a great decision, which is pretty much what everyone told me. I think they were really happy and relieved that they wouldn't have to help me.
I wonder if after reading this book or maybe knowing more about how Cassie felt afterwards, I wonder if they've changed their minds.
Yeah, because she didn't really go to them with, I would like to try, because she was so scared of the shame, she said, for their scorn and disdain if I failed them.
And then when she, and the agency just, what a nightmare agency. You know, they didn't talk to her about any other options. It was all adoption all the time.
Yeah.
And then
how great
she said
it,
It wasn't overt coercion, but there was still coercion. They gave me this worksheet divided into two columns labeled things I can provide for my baby and things adoptive parents can provide for my baby.
I thought that was just
a bunch of that is so blatant.
Malarkey, as my relatives used to say. Yeah, that's just like, I'm sorry, how gross. Because obviously when you're struggling and young, you see, oh, and then they had her immediately look at books of potential parents who look wealthy and together. And she was feeling, what did she say? I felt so low about myself. And I don't want to bother the parents too much if it's an open adoption. Should I, you know, because they asked her, do you want 1 year, 2 years, or 5 years of letters? Like, she was a bother.
Right. Certainly felt that after she met them. And then she also said, you know, a lot of the adoptive parents were just different people. They were religious or straight-laced. And she wanted to have, she aspired to have someone like her, but better.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Better. And she was a people pleaser, she said.
I mean, actually, I felt, you know, very much that I probably would have been the same at that age. Maybe not right at that age, but a little bit younger for sure. I always thought if I had gotten pregnant, I would, you know, it's like that. You are a people pleaser. You don't want to let anybody down. And now it's just like the feelings of losing that baby that you really become. She didn't know she'd really be a mother. She really didn't even know if she wanted kids. Then she's like, I do. I'm a mother. And my child's gone. It's hard.
She went into a deep depression. Also, she really, you know, they were like a journalist and a fashion designer. So yes. She was kind of intimidated by their, you know, in awe of their.
Yeah. How cool they were.
I mean, she was in college. She was 22, you know, I don't know. It just made me sad. Then she did have second thoughts. And, you know, that's the thing. And I think that the adoption agencies know that the hormonal stuff, you know, that's why they get the signatures and get that baby away from those mothers right after birth, you know, because you don't know until you know,
you don't know. No, you don't know. You're holding this baby or you've had the baby. And it's like,
wait a minute, this is my baby.
I thought what was interesting, and I wondered what happened with my mother's case, is that right away, she was so important until she had the baby.
Right.
And then what?
That's what she says here. She had no contact, absolutely none, with the parent, you know, after the baby was born. And then the agency did not reach out to her.
And they were all over her before that. Every day contacting
them. All over. Yes. It's just, gosh.
Wipe your hands. Here's what she says later.
Oh, but before that, you know, they came, she did get to see him at 2.5 because they adopted another child. I'd love to know who these people are.
the same thing. I wonder who it is. And then she said, after all of this, how long has it been now? I think Miles, her son, is 8 when this was written. And she hadn't seen him since he was 5, I believe. And then she said, I do feel differently about adoption. Before everything, I was like, oh, it's a great thing. The only thing I know about adoption was from the media, and everyone says it's great. So that's what I thought, too. My experience completely changed that for me. Now I find the media stories pretty problematic.
Yeah, she cites Juno, which we've talked about, you know, that it's no big deal. Juno was off riding a bike and right after, you know, it's...
Yeah. Right?
Here's what I was talking about. You know, you can't make that choice when you're pregnant and it's such a crisis moment. In this state, you can sign your termination of parental rights 24 hours after birth. And the agency workers pretty much make you do it as soon as possible. Mm-hmm. They don't encourage you to wait. They don't encourage you to think about it after. If I could go back, I just wish I would have waited a couple of days because I wouldn't have made the same choice. Oh, my God. This whole chapter, I was just thinking about.
Oh, my God. I know.
My own son. Yeah. And like,
what if you were just, and you're caught between all these people and you're doing the right thing. And then you don't want to, you want to speak up and you can't. And then you realize I should have, and I could have, and you don't. And it's, I don't know. It's very upsetting.
And then she talked about, you know, she didn't feel like a therapist would help because she felt like therapists would have the same narrative about adoption. You know, that thinking it's a wonderful thing. So she really didn't have anywhere to turn. All that said, she and her boyfriend stayed together and had a baby, Amelia.
Little daughter.
So she's, you know, she'll stay open to him checking her out.
She says, I honestly think that's something that should be left up for him to decide. You know, maybe someday, if I ever do talk to him, he can tell me what he feels.
Mm-hmm.
Gosh.
Well, we know. We've talked to a lot of adoptees. I feel like we know what he'd feel one day.
We're going to know what he's, yeah. Might take him a while.
It might take
him. We get to Jordan, who had given it. So by the time Gretchen talked to her, so this was, Jordan had given up her son like in 2019, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Jordan had grown up in foster care, moving from home to home before ending up in a group facilities and aging out of the system. Jordan was homeless when she found out she was pregnant. And then that kind of spurred her to like, oh, I'm going to.
I thought Jordan did a great job.
This baby.
Yeah, she cared about her. She went to the prenatal visits, got healthcare, got a job.
And wanted to keep her baby.
And then
had an unfortunate incident, you know, and this is what happens to people. Like, and you know, and she was from foster care. Her boyfriend's ex, I guess.
Yeah, like got in a fight with her.
Got in a fight and then. She called the police before Jordan could. And so Jordan went to jail and then.
Yeah. And in jail, which was interesting, she had health care in jail. She had some nice things in jail, but she couldn't figure out
the prenatal care. Yeah.
Yeah. And she actually was in a calm situation to keep going towards motherhood. But then how do you leave jail? Now you don't have your job. Now you don't have the money. That's really, there's no support once again.
Right. Once again, money. Well, and then COVID hit, you know, yeah. So it was just one thing, the domino effect, you know, this is what happens in the cycle of poverty. It's hard to get out. And then of course there aren't resources to help with her with that. Certainly resources to get her baby, but not resources to help her get on her feet. This is just,
you know, the title of this book we've talked about before, but my husband was watching me read and finish up. And he said, oh, what's the rest of the title here? And I said, well, I kind of told him about these two women in a short. And I said, the privilege of American motherhood.
Right.
I never really realized what a privilege it is in such an expensive country with all these things to have a child. You know, other places are just more supportive and different, but it really is who gets to raise that child? Who has the, you know, what do we support as a society, honestly?
And here, let's talk about that word privilege for a second, because just because you can't have your own child, what gives you the right or the privilege to have somebody else's baby? It's just to take somebody else's baby. And again, you know, people are unaware and they're not, but there's information out there now. There's this book, there's American Baby, there's The Baby Thief, there's Girls Who Went Away. You know, those are all earlier eras. This is current. There's adoptee voices out there.
Yeah.
Pay attention, people. Like, listen to what you're being told. And there's got to be some changes anyway.
Yeah, it is. This book is going to keep hitting us over the head.
I know.
Every time there's a nugget. I mean, well, when
Jordan, I guess, had a little different experience with the adoption agency she had decided she wanted an LGBTQ couple because of just her own situation of, I think, what did she say?
She was bisexual.
She was color, so she wanted parents of color. So one of them was the father. So she had two fathers. In terms of like how an adoption could go, sounds like it's the best it could possibly have gone. They've been really open.
They've been really open and really communicative.
Yeah.
Like, really included her, not just the little details and milestones, but she had 6 visits a year. They wanted her to know. I thought, you know, this is maybe also so people listen what open really means is not just here's some detail of once a year and drift off with letters. It really means she's involved in their lives.
Yep.
So far, you know.
You know, there must be something, I could get reamed for saying this, but there must be something about a competition between the adoptive mother and the birth mother, because these are two men that didn't feel that way and were totally open. And
yeah, they felt very excited to know her and.
And competition might not be the right word, but a threatened to have the birth mother around. I mean, I think that maybe is the difference in, you know, I don't know. I'm speculating.
Yeah. I mean, I thought the same thing actually when I was reading it. Well, the next time we get into some bigger stuff again.
Yeah. We've got a long chapter coming up. People who are reading along with us, we're going chapter 2, Choosing Life. So that's our next one. If you're reading along with us.
This is going to be big.
Yeah. Well, they all are, aren't they?
They all are. Well, stay tuned for Valerie. This story yeah. is really.
Wow, Valerie's really got a yeah, story.
She does.
Really interesting. Talk about determination. Boy. Mm-hmm.
We'll see you in a minute.
Yeah, see you in a minute. Hello, here we are for another episode introducing, coming to us from Asheville, North Carolina. Lucky you. Here is Valerie Naiman. Hi, Valerie.
Hey, good morning. I'm excited.
How are you?
To be here.
I'm nice to see you. To have you.
It's supposed to freeze again tonight.
Oh, I know. We've been having that.
Ooh. Oh, God. We had to bring all the plants in again. So,
yeah, here, like in and out. Honestly, I was angry this week at how cold it was. Unreasonably angry. I yeah. really was.
We had like 80 something degrees. And then the next morning, snow flurries. So.
Oh, it's just infuriating.
Yeah. Crazy.
Like, anyway. We like
your background. You wrote a book, Mystic Masquerade. So you'll have to give us the link for that for our
yes,
show notes.
Okay. Put it in our show notes.
Sorry, I didn't send these out to you, and I certainly will right away.
Beautiful cover for you.
Yeah, very
YouTube.
Nice.
And Adoptee's Search for the Truth, Mystic Masquerade. Beautiful.
I was told by everybody, do not do your own cover. And so I hired somebody to do covers, and I just didn't like them. And I kept giving them the ideas. And anyway, I ended up designing my own with my
help. It's fantastic.
And people.
You are clearly an artist, Valerie.
Looks like a murder mystery.
It's wonderful.
And I said, no, those are my eyes too. And it was, you know, just bringing forth all the masks we wear as adoptees. So many trying to figure out, well, who am I?
We sure do. Yeah.
Let's get into that. So,
all right.
Tell us your story, how you would like to tell it.
My story. Well, I'm pretty sure I was adopted in Miami and conceived in Redondo Beach, California.
Ah.
And that my mother split. She may have been married. I've never found divorce records, so I don't really know. But she left and went to Miami to disclose the pregnancy. And
what did she have a connection in Miami or
not that I know of? She and her best friend like stole their kids. Both of them were married. One was married to my uncle, my mother's brother, and they took their kids and went cross country. I have a picture of them in this old car. I was born either in 1950 or 1954. My mother doesn't remember. And I was told I was adopted at birth. However, my adoption papers were 1954. So it's very confusing.
That's a big difference, by the way.
You know,
that's a four-year difference.
You should see this. Miami has some fishy stuff going on because
yes,
we have
do.
Another friend that was born in Miami. And his birth certificate says 1970, yet his adoption, the adoption took place in 1969. So how is that possible?
Right.
Really fishy stuff. Yeah.
It's not very possible. Fishy. And the hospital I was supposedly born in is on both my fake birth certificates. And there's evidence that, I mean, I went there to try and excavate this, and the hospital had burned down conveniently with all the records. And this is
yet another fire.
Yeah,
how many fires?
All the Cole babies came from. You know, there was this Dr. Cole who was like selling babies.
Oh, right. We've heard of that.
He died with that. I mean, thousands.
Yeah, and we had another guest who was in Miami, and she was likely kidnapped, stolen at birth.
From that. Yes.
From Miami. Yeah.
Miami was a mafia ring, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so my adopted father, you know, told me stories of being in Al Capone's house, eating off of gold plates. I said, oh, yeah, really? So he was connected, and he was a 33-degree Mason. This is my adopted father. And they were very old when they adopted me. And they had adopted.
Like, how old were they?
Yeah, I was going to say, what's very old?
Almost 50.
Yeah, that is. Yeah.
And this was in Miami. You grew up in Miami.
I grew up in Miami.
What part of Miami, out of curiosity? I lived there for a while.
I lived at 2449 Southwest 4th Street. Funny, I can remember that. And grew up, it's like a block from Miami High, and then my mother got cancer and they sold out and moved to Hialeah. And so I went to numerous different schools. And then I ended up living in Coconut Grove, and I spent most of my time in Coconut Grove when I was in the film and television industry. Mm. So my mother, when she was dying of cancer, it was like her dying wish was to see me settle down and get married, because I'd been pretty crazy. I've run away from home. I was one of those kids that, you know, just never fit in, this kind of stuff. I think one of you left home at like 15.
Sarah.
It's me, yeah.
Right. I remember hearing some of your stories.
And went to Miami.
Yeah, you went to Miami where your mother was, right? Mm-hmm,
yes.
Yeah, it's so crazy because, you know, I got non-identifying information a couple of times. And, you know, my mother was from like the far largest western coastal state. Of course, that's California, you know. So
that's what it said.
Yeah. You know, weird. The few information, she had blue eyes and blonde hair. So I thought, well, that part must be true.
I love how they always put the eye color and the hair color. Yeah, thank you.
Can you tell us about the medical history, please?
Yeah, exactly.
A little bit more.
So jumping back for 1 second, your parents were older and they had already adopted a boy before you. How much older was he?
3 years.
Did they have any natural children?
No.
Why did they wait so long?
I have no idea. I didn't know I was adopted.
Oh.
You know, I wondered, and, you know, my brother, when I was about 7, we had a big birdhouse in the backyard, and I used to go, you know, give him water. I was always connected to birds. And so he came in one day just angry as shit and yelling and throwing his baseball cap down, and the dust was all over, kicking up. And I said, "What's the matter with you?" And he goes, "We don't belong here. They're not our parents."
Oh, so
that must have been when he found out.
He found out.
I'm like, he always played jokes on me and put BBs on my floor and, you know,
brother.
On my door. Yeah. He was.
I had one. A big brother. And so horrible.
You know, I went to my parents and I asked them. They were both sitting together in the dining room. And they looked at me and I was just like crazy. And my mom's like, "Do you want ice cream?" Because that was our go-to. I said, "No. What's the matter?" I said, "Lee says you're not our parents." And they just were deadpan. And they kind of looked at each other. And it was like, so I was adopted into a Jewish family. Here I am, the only blonde-haired, blue-eyed, right? And so.
And he was, so your father was like criminally connected?
Not really. I mean, he became a lawyer. He opened one of the first nightclubs in Miami. He was a publisher, always wanted me to be a writer. But he
liked to tell the stories of it, though.
Yeah. And when I confronted them, it's like the Jewish mentality of do for you, slave for you. Do you ever show appreciation? Why would you ever ask a question like that? They wouldn't talk about it. And I spent the whole day and night in my room, like wondering what the hell's going on.
Did you ever ask your brother, how did he find out?
Oh yeah. He my brother is so uncommunicative. It's surprising he ever even said that. And so he somehow found out through somebody else. It must have been family or something, but he never told me. He was kind of reprimanded, I think, for telling me something like that. And so he was like, zip.
How old were you?
7-ish.
And so he was like 10.
Yeah. I'm sure some adult didn't keep the secret.
Right. Somebody blabbered. But for my life, I never knew. You know, I remember being in my room just crazy about it, going, yeah, I don't look like anybody.
And they never followed up with any kind of conversation about it, anything.
Never.
Yeah, it's really confusing, you know?
It is. And I asked a few times. I tried to get information. And it's like, oh, well, if you did have another mother, she was probably a drunk. And she's probably dead.
Nice.
And, you know, stuff like that. And it's like, it was very confusing. And I thought, you know, they always gave me Dutch trinkets, like the little blue and white Dutch things from Holland. Mm-hmm. My uncle would travel to Holland and bring back all this stuff for me and Dutch chocolates, which I loved, and gave me wooden shoes. And so I was thinking, I'm probably Dutch, maybe, you know.
Yeah,
your imagination just goes
cling on to that
wild when you're, you know, right. Don't have the
right. So I let it go, you know.
It's cruel, really, isn't it?
So, yeah, it is.
I had a good life. My parents were, you know, I got a lot being a child. I was, you know, my mother was a stage mother and she enrolled me in all these pageants and I had ballet, acrobatics, piano, cotillion when I got older. And then, you know, they would take me on Sundays to the deli, to Wolfie's on Miami Beach.
I know Wolfie's.
Yeah, it set me up on the table and I tap dance.
Oh, my.
My mom's Shirley Temple.
Yeah.
So
baby.
You're with your little blonde curls and blue eyes.
Yeah.
Shirley Temple.
I wasn't shy at all. And so, yes, Sarah, look at you playing with your hair. I do this all the time.
It's a self-soothing. I've been doing it my whole life. It's the early fidget.
Yeah,
it was my fidget thing.
But listen to it in my ears.
My dad would like slap my hand away. I couldn't help it. It was how I coped.
Isn't that funny? I wonder how many adoptees do that.
Yeah.
And I narrow it down to one little hair.
I do the rocking, tapping.
You do the rocking. Yeah, I saw
this. Or I tap my fingers down.
I saw this documentary on
monkeys. I type with my fingers.
And they put, you know, monkeys, they would take them away from their family and put them someplace else. And they would just rock and rock and rock. So it's kind of a primal thing. It's like nurturing. You want to be rocked.
Mm-hmm.
Gary, I mean, I have a memory. My earliest memory is very unclear, but I'm lying on the ground screaming until my voice, I have no voice.
Mm.
Every once in a while, that'll come back to me. And I'm like, oh, God. So, you know, my parents were both busy. They had their businesses. And, you know, I was pretty much, I was raised a lot by nannies. And so.
It's interesting. Many things have not changed in the adoption world, as we are discovering. But one thing that has changed is that there is no way in hell anybody in their late 40s or early 50s would be able to adopt a baby now. It's just mind-boggling. Because you really, you know, especially back then, right? The lifespan was much shorter than it is now. So you'd be lucky to even get, you know, 25 years with them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, after
my parents passed, it's like I found my adoption records, and that's when I knew.
Uh-huh. How old were you when they passed away?
20s. I was in my early 20s.
Figure. I just said, yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And so I found these papers from an attorney. It all went through an attorney. Wasn't an adoption agency. Mm-hmm. So I imagine they paid a good price for what they wanted, you know?
A Shirley Temple.
Yeah, that was all in 1954, but my two certificates say I was born in 1950 at the Edgewater Hospital.
But I mean, that's just a huge difference. It's not even
4 years.
What the heck?
I know. And the hospital code doesn't match up with the hospital. You know, you can look those up. And I'm like, this is really weird.
I'm sure it was like just a changed thing through the lawyers. They probably just made it very difficult to ever. You know,
right.
For you to ever find whoever. Yeah.
Yeah. I was listed as infant Hansen on my adoption records. And I'm like, I was right. I'm Dutch. I'm Dutch. And so I went down that route. You know, this was before DNA testing.
Right. Yeah.
You know,
you were in your 20s. So it was the 70s, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. There was zero.
Nothing.
Available.
Zero.
Yeah.
Nothing, you know, it was like newspapers and libraries and you're still not getting anywhere. And it was shocking to me that I was adopted indeed. And I found my brothers and he didn't want to know anything about it.
I wondered that he was like, nope, I'm done.
Guys are like that sometimes. Mm-hmm. Later, after I did a lot of discovery, his wife got interested and then he tested and opened up a Pandora's box that his brother always thought who his father was really wasn't. It was his uncle. So he had another whole Pandora's box open. But he's in good relationship with them now.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So where did the course of your life lead you? So you said you had troubled teen years.
Yes.
You know, acting out. And your did your parents like sort of help you through that or no?
No. No, they actually sent me away when I was in high school because I was, quote, hanging around with the wrong people and blah, blah, blah. And they sent me to Franklin, North Carolina, where we had a summer home. And so, you know.
So you went there. Who did you stay with?
Oh, I stayed with one of our neighbors at the time from our summer home because we went there every summer. Mm-hmm. Nobody wanted to be in the heat of Miami. And it was like this Christian family and they had.
So we're just going to send you to this other family to fix our problems. And
yeah, but it was weird because, you know, I came in the middle of a school year and I'm like an alien.
I'm sure.
Girls hated me and they would steal my jacket and stuff like that. And Becky, she was also came in from Florida. And so we became best buds and hung out together. But it's like, we were pretty good kids. And the people I was staying with, their daughter, you know, was sleeping with her boyfriend, all this stuff. And, you know, they were the wild ones, right? So anyway.
They're the good Christian family you were sent to, right, to help out.
And then when I came back to Miami, I moved in with my girlfriend from junior high school. We had been cheerleaders together in Miami High. And so I finished my last year there. And that was good. I got into theater then. That's when I got into theater and started feeling like, wow, I can like school. This is fun. Mm-hmm. So that started my whole theater career.
And what are your parents doing during this when you move back? Do you see them or?
Well, I see them sometimes, yeah. I'm living with my girlfriend. You know, yeah. I said, listen, I have to go to where my friends are.
So they're sort of washing their hands of it all.
Kind of. I mean, my girlfriend came and lived at our house for a while. But by
and still time, the adoption never came up. It was just nothing. And never until they died. Did you, and then did you do? Go, you were going through their stuff?
Oh, yeah.
Found your adoption records?
As they passed, I got into my dad's office. I got tons of keys and started opening up locked file cabinets. And I found, and I'm like, oh my God, I still have it. I still have all those records. And it listed me as Infant Hansen. This is 1954. Doesn't make any sense at all. The one thing I like is I can pretend to be either 4 years older or younger. So I'm either 73, almost 74, or I'm 70.
I mean, well, and just you tearing up, that is the whole plight of adoptees, right? I mean, it still like affects you tremendously. It's just, it will always, and people don't understand this.
And we don't, for me, I didn't even know that I was, you know, reacting because of it.
Right.
I had no idea about like the primal wound.
Or, oh, no.
You know, I'd never had counseling my whole life. To this day, I've only had counseling once. And I didn't realize how that affected me because I was never able to bond.
Yeah.
Never able to bond. Never close to anybody. My girlfriend, my closest friend, we're still friends. But being able to bond or, you know, dating in relationships.
I know.
I would jump out of a relationship at the thought of somebody leaving me.
Yeah.
And
get out before they get out, right?
That's right. Mm-hmm. And abandon before you can be abandoned.
Or choose people who are absolutely unavailable. Yeah, so you don't have to.
Exactly. You know, yeah. This day,
kid yourself into thinking you want a relationship.
Right. To this day, my longest relationships have been no more than 3 years. And that's crazy. And then I did go to relationship training and tried a variety of techniques once I realized that, oh my God, this stems from something. Mm-hmm. And it still didn't help.
Yeah. It's so deep rooted. It is so baked in.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's Nancy Barrier. It's primal. But we don't even typically know it, especially if we don't know we're adopted. It's like, where does this come from?
That's such a cruel thing not to tell someone. And
I mean, you are technically a late discovery adoptee.
Right.
Even though you were told kind of at 7,
right,
you were gaslit about it.
Yeah, right.
Exactly. And they, you know, it's a sad thing. I have learned so much once I got connected into the adopted community.
Mm-hmm.
After I got not one, but I ended up over the years getting 3 DNA tests.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah, tell us about that.
Yes.
Oh my God. Well, the first one I got was with National Geographic.
Really?
So my friend said, you really need to test, you know, to find out and, you know, support National Geographic. So I did. So they had a genome project, which they've since quit and removed all the records.
Oh.
I have the original ones. And what I found out is there was absolutely no matches. But I had one of the highest percentages of Denisovan DNA. And I'm like,
what's that?
What's that? Right. So by that time I had a computer, right? So I Googled Denisovan DNA. And what came up on my screen was, I wished I'd have taken a picture of that screen. But it's still there. I looked recently because I was doing some research about it. And it says, meet the strangest hybrid in hominoid history.
What?
What? What is that? So
this is what you're going off of?
Yes. So I thought, holy shit, no wonder. I'm an alien.
Yeah, I was going to say, you really are an alien.
That's it. That's it. Oh my God.
No wonder you don't belong. Come on, Laurie.
Talk about a rabbit hole to go into.
Okay.
I went down into that rabbit hole for way over here.
Thank you, National Geographic.
Oh my God. Like, they had only discovered it within that decade. And so it's like there wasn't a whole lot of information.
Yeah.
So you're stuck, you know, it's like, oh, well,
that's, yeah, there you
just
go.
Going terribly deep to find out where it came from. Am I, you know, and I'm like, all right. And they,
so that was 10 years. You had that for 10 years until you could do the next DNA.
Oh, no, no. It wasn't that long. I mean, I spent a year going deep into research and then.
What did it tell you about that?
Well, they didn't have much information. But what I did connect it to is O negative blood. And, you know, that's the only blood they don't know where it came from.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And it's the only blood that they've not been able to clone.
Right. And I've learned a little bit about that. Yeah, that's interesting.
You know, and I was Googling and I got into these. At that time, too, you could actually had joined all these sites that if you put your information up there and they're your bio parents are looking for you, that you can do a match. I did that for years before computers, right? It's all letters and never got anything off of that. Let's see, I forgot where I was taking my train.
So after National Geographic, then you did another DNA test.
Yeah, that's what I was curious. What's the next one?
Okay, so the next one I did was Ancestry.
Mm-hmm.
I did Ancestry and I was so excited. I got all these matches back, but it was like third cousins.
Yeah. And it really needs to be in the second level, doesn't it?
Second or first, you know, mm-hmm. That's when I found out if you get a first, it's probably your sibling. And so I went down that rabbit trail. Unbelievable. I'm kind of opposed to printing things out, but I printed out everyone that closely matched like third or fourth. Mm-hmm. And then I would tape them all together. And I had this matrix of papers, started in this room because it's where my desk is. And I had them all taped together, went into my kitchen, down into my living room. Just, I think I went through over a ream and a half of paper.
And what kind of background did you have, even at that distant level?
Were you Dutch?
Yeah, that's what I'm curious.
No Dutchess. And on my on the papers, my adoption papers, I'm listed as infant Hansen. I had no Hansen in any of my matches, none of them, because I kept going down the Hansen route.
That could have been an attorney or something. I mean, you never
yeah,
know.
Like a hiding of the.
It definitely was hiding. And that gets into a really interesting story later. But and my friend came over and he brought these giant 4x6 rollout things with sticky stuff on them so I could stick them on. Because even taping them together, then I'd find something else and then I'd have to remove it. And I thought I was a descendant of Grant, President Grant. You know, just went one way.
Well, I thought I was an Astor, Valerie. So.
It was unbelievable, unbelievable. So I never got anywhere with it.
Gosh.
And so it was, I mean.
And that was what year?
Like, yeah, when was that?
I have to look that up.
Couldn't have been too long. It had to be.
Right. Had to have been the last like 15 years, right?
2015 or something.
Yeah. That's
after I found out I was Denisovan or Denisovan, however people want to say it, that I went and got another one. And so, and then it was a couple of years after that, when I got nowhere, that I got 23andMe. All right. So 23andMe, I had some different matches and I was able to patchwork a few more things together. But, you know, I sent out numerous messages on Ancestry and 23andMe. And of course, I uploaded it to, what is it, MyHeritage or?
MyHeritage, yeah.
Yeah, I uploaded that and still didn't get anywhere. And it went on for, this went on for years. I'm like, I am so hidden.
Yeah.
This is like.
You were meant to be hidden and you were.
I was, but I never gave up. And so I'm already in my 60s now, right? And I think I was in my 60s when I finally got 23andMe. And then from there, it was, what am I going to do? And I thought, oh, I know what I'll do. If I can get two psychics to tell me my mother's first name, I might have something or my mother's name.
Gosh, so it's so sad, the lengths, like having to, I mean.
And also just your age.
Be denied our basic right of identity. It's just, yeah. I still.
Yeah.
Crime.
And you're getting psychics, right?
It's a crime.
And then you're in your 60s and time goes on for who you're going to find too, which is so sad.
My friend, yeah. My friend said, you know, you might as well give this up. She's probably dead.
Yeah.
Don't ever say that to an adoptee. Yeah. Never. You know, still have hope. I never gave up.
Valerie, when my family found me, my biological family, they said, the first thing the woman on the phone said is, oh, well, your mother's died, and then started to go into other information. And it was like, this is the person you think about your whole life. You're like, well, can I absorb this for 5 minutes, please? I'm sorry. That's like kind of, I don't know. People don't understand. That's no, so.
They don't
understand.
It's really heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Because they don't understand. And it's heartbreaking because the narrative is so screwed up.
And they get irritated. You know, if I talk about it too much with certain friends or family members, they get irritated. Like, oh, get over it.
There's that thing again. Why are you bringing
that
up?
Get over it.
That's such a great upbringing. You were chosen.
I have to remind people, like, okay, think about, especially like a fellow parent, think about you had that baby and that baby goes away. How do you think you would feel? And how do you think that baby feels like? And then they can finally have some empathy, but it takes having to get to, you know, talk to like that. Like,
yeah, it's difficult.
Yeah, it is. Take us back on your train. I'm going to start using that, by the way. I don't know where my train went, but
I got off at the wrong exit.
Go back to your train. So you're 23andMe. Nothing. Right, still. Right,
nothing. You know, and I'm back and forth and I'm still excavating as much as I can. I got tired of paying for Ancestry every month. And
I know. Yeah.
So the last month that I had it, I used every day up to midnight to excavate more and more and more. And so, I went to India. I'm like, I was on a spiritual quest. Anyway, I know where I was. psychics. So I found
yes,
the psychics. Largest congregation of psychics live in a place called Casadega, Florida.
Nice. It's, I didn't know that.
I thought it was Cambria.
No, that's Wiccan.
California. Oh, Wiccans, right.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm getting my mystic things wrong.
Right. We need to go there, Sarah, to the psychic place.
My little dog, Mott's ball. I never wanted to have children. I was too afraid. It's like, what would I tell my kids? So I never had children, but I had a dog and I named him Matzah Ball so I would respect my Jewish heritage. And
there you go.
Anyway, he was my bud and we packed up and I had moved to Asheville. I moved to Asheville in 1980 after working in the film and television industry for quite a while. So all this stuff in the DNA test happened after I moved to Asheville. Mm-hmm. So over that, I don't know, 15 years, I was here for a while before I delved in and my friend told me to do National Geographic.
So you and Matzah Ball pack up to go to see some psychics in Florida.
Casadega, Florida. Yeah. So we get there and it's like, all right, there's one hotel and it's like they only had one room and they usually don't rent it because it's haunted. People have experiences in there. And I thought, oh, shit, I don't care. I'm doing it. But we didn't have any weird experiences. And I
wish we knew each other back then.
I booked it too. Psychics and, you know, you can book at the front desk. And so I booked all these psychics. And then I started on that routine. And, you know, it's like three of them told me that my mother... They saw the ocean, you know, so that kind of confirmed California. And one of them just told me a bunch of shit about, oh, you'll be traveling soon and things anybody could tell you. The one that was really interesting went into, yeah, I walked in there and it was dark. She had her, you know, she looked like a mystic, you know, with like a crystal ball and a candle in front of her. And anyway, she... When I said, I only have one question, what's my mother's name? And she like went into, her eyes were like, you know, ants running around behind her eyes. And I thought that could be a show or it might be real. And then she said, oh, for my mother, she goes, oh, I see a fire. And I thought, oh my, she was cremated. And then... And then it's like, no. Blaze. Her name is Blaze, right?
Blaze.
Elizabeth Blaze. Okay. None of the other psychics use those words. But Elizabeth was the middle name of my adopted mother. And later, much later, I found out that my maternal grandmother's name was Blazer. Huh. So there was bits of truth in what she said. She goes, oh, you're going to meet this man. He's from a foreign country, but you'll meet him in America. You're soulmates and you'll recognize him by this ring. And, you know, she started describing it and I was drawing it in my journal. And then she took my journal and drew it. And I didn't know till much, much later, after I'd spent 11 years in India, where that ring was, because that ring was actually given to me and I'd forgotten about the tapes that I had. But anyway, there are some.
That's interesting, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, it turned out to be my teacher who I met in America and ended up being his assistant, learning Hindi and Sanskrit and traveling the world with him. You know, I thought when she said, you're going to meet this, I thought, oh, I'm going to have a relationship finally. Little did I know that it'd be my spiritual father. And so let's see, where's the train? So the psychics at that time didn't get me anywhere. You know, I had some leads to go from, but I didn't get the same name. And, you know, then I hired a detective and three detectives, actually, I went through.
It's so much money and time. It's just, it's unreal, right? It's a lifetime here.
One of the detectives I found out over a decade later had told me the truth.
What do you mean?
He said that he was able to get into the records at the Miami courthouse.
And?
And that he gave me the address of where my mother was living at the time of my birth. And what else? I forgot what else. Anyway, I drove to Miami, right? There'd never been a house there. And so I assumed he was also a goofball. I wanted to put a bloodhound, play Sherlock Holmes, right? Yeah. I wanted to put a bloodhound on these guys. It's like, I felt like they all lied to me, or they just used it as, you know, to make money. And as it turns out, one of them had actually told me some truth. But I didn't know it at the time. There was no way I could verify it. And the name Hansen meant nothing.
Yeah. Did he figure that out? Or how did you know the maternal grandmother's name, Blazer?
Oh, that wasn't until much, much later. Okay. So after I gave it up again, and then I went to India, I spent 11 years there. I figured, you know, maybe because I saw miraculous things in India. And, you know, I was told that, you know, it wasn't time for me to know and this kind of stuff. Anyway, after 11 years in India, when I came back, I had a map of India and I mapped out around the world and in India where I had been. And that map was also in my journal from years ago with the psychic who told me I'd meet this man and I'd go in a triangle across the oceans three times with him. And I did. So I was like, oh my God, there's truth in this. So I got out the old tapes and started listening to them. And so many of the things that one woman had told me ended up later to be true. So I'm still on the Hansen roll, right? But I have no matches. And so that's when I do the 3DNA test and get nowhere. And then years go by after that. And it was 4.5, 5 years ago. All of a sudden, you know, I would periodically open Ancestry, open all those, see if there's anything new. And all of a sudden, I get a first cousin. Oh shit, I've got it. Now I got it. And so, because I knew that could be my sister, right? And so I tried to get, you know, I Googled, I got on Facebook, I looked all over, I found a picture of her. She looked, you know, blonde hair, blue eyes. I'm like, oh God, I'm close. But there was no way to get a hold of her. And I got, at that time, I had gone to the, I'm skipping around here, but I went to the American Adoption Congress when it was in Atlanta. My friend talked me into going. There was no rooms left because I went at the last minute, but it was great. I jumped into everything and I ended up being invited to stay in a room with Mary Wilson, who is a search angel in Texas. And we stayed up that night. Her story is amazing. She was a birth mother. And so anyway, when she left, because she had to catch a cruise the next day before the event was over. So I got her room and we became good friends. And when she left, she goes, I'm going to help you. Because originally she said, I only do Texas. So she helped me. So when I got the first, you know, cousin, I'm like, Mary, look what I got. And somebody, so she got online and found somebody within that triad that, meanwhile, she had sent me things before that. It's, oh, we think this might be, and then Lana got involved too. And then they couldn't get anywhere and got some detective in California who didn't get anywhere. And I'm like, oh, screw. But she got online and connected with somebody involved and got the message through. And I got a phone number because she had the people search or whatever. Anyway, I got a phone numbers and I was like nervous, calling them, no answer, wrong number, blah, blah, blah. You know how that goes. And then I finally got a hold of some man. He goes, who are you? What do you want?
Nice.
Right. And so he turned out to be my paternal sister's husband. And he was 15 years younger than her. And he put me through 2 days of
screening.
Yes. And then he finally said, okay, well, I realize you're not a terrorist and you'll know when you meet me why it's so important. And she wants to call you, she will. So I've skipped way ahead. That's
okay.
and so I did get to unite with my sister, but that's another strange story.
Was that your mother's daughter?
This was my father's.
Okay.
And the reason she tested is she wanted to know who our father's mother was. As it turns out, he was also adopted. Aye. So many of the names changed, right? So there was no trail to go on.
Yeah.
My sister's mother, who was not my mother, had spent her life like writing letters to find out who our father's mother was, which is another interesting story. When I found that, when I finally met them in Vegas, that was a trip. He was dead, but I got
your father. Your father was dead.
Was he like an orphan train baby or anything like that?
No, I don't know a whole lot because we don't know who his mother is to this day. I'm almost close in finding out. I did get his original birth certificate and his mother. It's unbelievable. On the certificate, it has a slot that you check or write into that mm-hmm. says legitimate.
Right. We've saw that recently.
Mm-hmm.
And it says no.
Right. Yeah. We just saw this a couple days first ago time. On somebody's birth certificate.
So, but I had the address of where she was supposedly living, and I got to Google it on that and find it. And then that belonged to a famous film screen actress. That's Silent Films, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure my grandmother on maternal side is a silent film screen actress. And my grandfather, as it turns out, had theaters.
Well, there you go.
Los Angeles.
Yeah. And you're theatrical. I mean, yes. Kind of cool and to find
I
out
look
about
more
yourself.
Like my grandparents than anybody else. That was so shocking to me to find out of, oh my God, it's in my DNA.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God. But going back to my mother, because that was my main focus, who cares about the father? I thought, oh, well, you know, he probably got her pregnant and left her. You create these.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Scenes in your mind. And so I was always weary of men. That affected me.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't trust them. Didn't. I just had this chip on my shoulder, which wasn't the case. Like many of us, all we have is our imagination. Right. It can go wild. So my mother, going back to my mother, we found out who it was. And I have pictures of her, and I was able to make contact through the two women that left California and went to Miami.
Yes.
Both had kids. And so they were raised together. So I was able to contact the other woman's daughter.
Okay.
Okay, I'm going to call her Macy. And so I finally got a hold of Macy because we got a hold of her daughter who was online. And Mary, my search angel, sent her a message without me knowing it and called me and said, get online quick. I sent a message. I'm like, oh, shit. So she said, yeah, I'll tell her right away. Because she told her I'd been trying to find her and look for her. And it was very important that I talk to her. So I ended up talking to Macy. And Macy's like, the message I sent Macy first is, hi, we went to the same high school and I'd love to connect with you, you know, because you don't want to say, hey, I'm adopted, you know, can you open up to me? So you have to be sneaky. So then I finally did get to talk to her. She seemed like a nice person and told her I was really wanted to connect with her aunt first because I had some private information to share. She wouldn't give the information. The numbers I had didn't go anywhere. So it came down to like, oh, you know, your father is my uncle. It's like, are you saying that you're my aunt's daughter type of thing? You know,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. What makes you think so? So I laid it all out to her and she goes, this is the most exciting thing that's happened in our family for a while. Yes, I will call her and talk to you and I promise to get back to you.
So she was alive.
I'm on pins and needles. It's like, oh God. Oh. So she calls me the next day and she goes, well, I talked to Aunt. I'm going to call her M&M, my mother. That was my nickname for her, Mother Mary. Mm-hmm. Eminem. So I talked to Eminem. She didn't, you know, fess up to anything.
Oh.
So are you positive? I said, yeah, 100%. 100%. She goes, all right, well, I'll talk to her again. And this went on and on and on. And finally, I get another call back that says, meanwhile, I'm pulling my hair out, right? All right. Do at that point I had her address and I'm like, Mary, you want to go with me? I'm driving down. And she goes, I'm doing everything I can to get you to calm down. Do not go down there yet. And so I mean, I had to see her one way or another, even if I had to pretend like my car was broken down in front of her house and ask for help, whatever. I had all these scenarios that I could do. My whole mind was like racing, trying to be able to just lay my eyes on her.
Yeah.
Maybe not even talk to her. Just lay my eyes on her. I'd have done anything to do that. I'd look for so long. So anyway, Macy calls me back and says, all right, Eminem said she will call you within a few days. I'm like, yes, great, great. Day one goes by. No. Day goes by. Day three goes by. I'm like, I'm Googling, what is the definition of few? What did you know? Doesn't have a definition.
Yeah, and right.
I was like, oh my God, I wouldn't leave the house. And I would take my, you know, I wanted to record everything. I wasn't going to miss a minute of this. So I had everything set up. And then it was like, you know, after day three, it's like, oh God, you know, I go out to the deck and then the phone rings and I come running back, you know, so many spam calls because I had to answer every.
Yeah.
Phone call at that point. So then I'm, you know, I took my phone as far away as I could from my Wi-Fi out to my gardens to see how far I could actually go and have my friends call me and see how long it took me to run back to turn it on. It was crazy. Those days were so crazy. And I was a singer in a band and they're like, come on, we got to do this today. I said, I'm not going anywhere till I talk to him. My mother. And they're like, all right, listen, this has been going on too long. Just come. If she calls, you can call her back and then you'll be calm. I said, so they talk me into it. I go out my back door, do my kitchen, do the laundry room, community laundry room, and get in my car, turn the engine on, and backing up, and the phone rings. And from Florida. And so I just stopped my car running. I ran in, and there's two locks because it gets frozen in the laundry room. So I had to get through the room. So I get to my, and I had everything I wanted to say in a piece of paper that wasn't in my pocket. Oh God. And so I knew I wasn't going to make it to my computer. So I stopped in my kitchen and I like, hello. You know, calm is like, good. Hello. And I get no response. Hello. And I thought, oh, shit, it's another spam call. Hello. And then I realized my sound thing had flipped off after all my.
Oh, no.
And so I turned it back on and I heard this voice going, when I'm saying, because she could hear me and said, right. Who is this? And I turned it on and it says, this is your mommy.
Mommy. Wow.
I flipped. I wasn't able to move. I wasn't able to say any. So I, my phone was up. Sorry, I was yelling, but give it a little, you know, this kind of stuff. And then I realized, shit, I'm not recording. So I ran in and started recording them. And we had a very long conversation.
So tell us the circumstances of your birth.
Yeah.
And.
Well, that's what I wanted to know.
Yeah. So. Oh, did she tell you?
I said, yeah, and I'm curious about my medical history. I fainted my whole life. Were you ever a fainter? She goes, no, I was never a fainter. I said, maybe my thinking now is that it was a birth trauma with the blood and being separated at the same time. And so later I became an epileptic. I fainted so much, but I cured myself from that. But anyway, I said something. Oh, shit, there's so much to the conversation. But she said, well, I don't remember going to the hospital. I don't remember anything.
Why did she not remember?
She was 94.
Oh, okay.
She looked great, but I got good DNA.
So have you met her then?
Yes, yes.
Oh,
yes.
Okay. So you are in Reunion.
Well, was she passed away last
year? Right. I'm okay.
Okay. Sorry.
Yeah. I mean, how fantastic that you got to meet her.
Yes.
I mean, really, the odds were not in your favor, considering.
Right. Right. I mean, I wanted to go down right away, you know, and I like say, oh, well, I'd like to see you. She agreed to meet me if I'd be a secret to her family.
Mm. Yeah. There you go.
So often we hear.
Right. I'd agree to anything just to see her. So we,
of course,
you know, it's like, when can I see? Oh, well, I'm busy here. I'm busy there. I've got a busy schedule. She's like, and her voice was identical to mine.
Mm.
Like I was hearing myself talk. And so anyway, finally, through a whole bunch of stuff, she was willing for me to come. And I told her I'd stay in an Airbnb. She goes, no, you'll stay with me. I said, yeah, but I'm a secret. How's that going to work? She goes, I've got this. Yeah, you know. Nobody's going to know. And so I went, and it was just amazing. You know, and I did ask her. It's like, must have been really hard
for
you to give me up. Oh, no.
Oh, no, she didn't say that.
Oh, Valerie.
She did. And then she said, but your father looked for you for a long time.
Aww.
Oh, I'm like, oh, God. That just blew away.
Yeah.
I never thought about it. But she was a character. We went out dancing. She loved to dance. I loved to dance. So there was that. Plus the fact, I mean, she was skinny and I've always been plump. So, but I found out later my father was plump. So, you know, it's like you grab these little things of your mirrors. Like, oh my God, your eyes are like mine.
I'm dying to know, what was your genetic,
yeah, me too,
national, you know, you're not Dutch, but what were you?
Actually, my mother's family came from Switzerland.
Mm-hmm.
So I was this. But I'm 97-98% British English, you know.
There you go. And no Hansen.
Nope.
No, that's just something.
And so can you bring us up to speed to where you are today? You're in touch with your siblings and all of that? Well,
she had a son after me, 3 years after, and a daughter 3 years before me that she took to Miami, and who will not acknowledge me, is like.
So she had a daughter she took to Miami, gave you up, and had another son.
Yeah.
You're the one given away.
Right. And
with no problem, obvious. I mean.
Well, no, it's easy for her, I guess. Yeah. But I got to know my brother, who's 3 years younger, and we're in communication a lot too.
Yeah. And then on your father's side?
That's another involved story.
We'll have to put that one on hold. We'll have to read your book. Everybody will have your book so we can wrap these up. It's really been such a pleasure talking to you. And I'm really glad at least all these years it took that you got the answers. I mean, and I'm just, as you were, you're so theatrical that I was just picturing this being a movie.
I was thinking
the psychics
thing.
And you and matzo ball and road trip and going to India. And I mean, it's amazing.
I'll tell you one quick thing, if we have time, is that
quick. Yes.
I'm still bothered about the Hansen thing. And so I finally, for my birthday, my mom asked what I want, my birth mother. And I said, I want my birth certificate. Will you sign all these papers? Because I had them all and my other parents were dead. I had all their stuff. So I sent it in to Florida Vital Statistics. They got back to me later and said, you sent in the right stuff, but that's not your mother's name. I had her sign an affidavit, right?
Oh my gosh.
And so anyway, that goes by. And I said, you know what? She was a gambler to my birth mother. I said, I'll bet you $100 that you put a fake name on there. She goes, okay. I never got that $100, but that's what happened. And I had her go down and notarize at a place they knew her anyway. And they didn't even look, with the last name of Hansen. Bingo.
Oh my gosh.
So she put the fake name. Your whole life, you know, Valerie, it's really
crazy.
Yeah, what you've gone through and then how nonchalant other people's actions are in someone's life is very, and then your father, you know, the one he looked for you. That's, it's sad now, but it's so healing too.
Yeah, my mother said she didn't know any of his family. And when I went to Vegas and found them, found out that she was a really good friend of his, an old flame, and had always been a good friend of the family. So she lied about a lot of stuff. There's lies within lies within lies. And
please send us your book, please.
Yes. And we'll put a link in the show notes so listeners, you can read this fascinating journey. It's really...
Yeah. You've been just a
really
treat
just
to have
fascinating. Thank you, Valerie, for sharing.
Yeah, put my website
time.
In there because yes. if you go to my website, there's part of my story songs.
Oh, we'll put everything.
An album of my adoption story songs. And there's part of the book in there, part of the audio book in there.
We want to keep up with you.
Yeah, send everything to us and we'll put it all in.
Thank you for all you're doing, getting this stuff out for
you.
Us. Having the adoption community is a godsend.
It I sure like that is. You're ending on that because that is the truth. Yes.
We're not alone. We're not
alone.
Like
every adoptee to please write your story.
Yeah.
And if you need help with that, get a hold of me.
Our podcast is all about creating an oral history.
Yes.
But we do need written histories too.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We have to one day, you know, generations from now, look back and see just how this was. Hopefully it'll change. But
yes.
Thank you, Valerie.
Thank you, Valerie.
Love talking to you. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Oh, I'm just, I love her.
That was, I mean, what?
What a story.
What a story. The hoops one has to go through.
Yeah.
Like she said, I mean, it is criminal, like hiding our identities and all that. And oh my gosh. I really honestly was picturing a movie as she was telling her story, just so dramatic and intense and like the lengths, you know, going to psychics and like anything.
And the heartbreak.
Any
the
grasp.
Heartbreak.
Yeah.
Yes. Like a whole life just
and then
not
her
fitting.
Flippant, you know, her birth mother is so flippant. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Well, she was just, I want to read her book. She's just, and like you said, the adoptee stories, having them, this is one, this is, you know, she's a little bit older too. And we can see the damage, not even telling her she was adopted. Just heartbreaking.
Yeah.
And I just love her too. Want to go see her.
I know.
We're coming
she
in.
She has the room. Yeah. We need to do an adoptee road trip.
Like, we do.
And go stay with, you know, wouldn't that be
it.
A fun little documentary?
So like much fun. Oh my goodness. Oh my gosh. Yes.
Really good.
Well, okay. What do we say?
Another great episode.
Another great episode. See you next time.
See you next time. Thanks so much for listening today.
And remember, if you'd like to share your stories or suggest any guests for our show, you can find us on all the socials at the Making of Me podcast.
And again, we have a Patreon page so that we can continue to bring these great adoption stories to you. So if you want to find that and donate or contribute in any way, find us at patreon.com searching adoption: The Making of Me.
Bye.
See you next time.